Elena. So Dr. Carbone has over 20 years of research experience working with adults and children to integrate behavioral interventions into community-based settings, including schools, after-school programs, and health centers. She uses mixed methods to examine obesity, diabetes, and cancer prevention. She is currently a PI on a large CDC-funded community transformation grant. She's an RD, associate professor, graduate program director, and community-engaged research director at UMass. She has received distinguished research and outstanding teachers awards. And so she'll be telling us now about the Springfield Farm to Preschool and Families program. So I look forward to your presentation.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and hold on, you're almost through. Hopefully this is the last session for you all. Okay, and I just want to begin by saying I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. So what I'm going to be talking to you about is a very small assessment program. The folks in Springfield, some of you may know her, Jessica Collins, approached the University of Massachusetts Department of Nutrition asking if there was a partner, an academic partner, to look at and evaluate the Farm to Preschool and Families program in Springfield. They had a very small amount of money, but they knew that good things were happening, and they just wanted to get something down on paper from an outside evaluator. So I was more than happy to do this, and it's been a fun journey, I have to say. Challenging, of course, but fun. So what I looked at was determining the effectiveness of the Springfield Farm to Preschool and Family program in increasing preschool children's intake of fruits and vegetables. So we looked at four preschools, and we purposefully selected these to represent varying degrees of participation in the Farm to Preschool program. So those who were active participants who had a nutrition curriculum, those who participated but didn't have a curriculum, and then we had a control site as well. And I will say that all of these Farm to Preschool programs, the preschoolers dealt with and served low-income populations. So for any of you who have young children or you remember your own school days, we purposefully selected three commonly served foods. This hasn't changed in, I think, 50 or 60 years. So green beans, carrots, and peaches. We wanted to make sure that all of the school sites had and served the same foods repeatedly. And we had a three-member research team that were trained in data collection methods. So we used both quantitative and qualitative methods to collect information similar to the colleagues. We did a plate waste evaluation before and after lunch. We conducted online surveys with school administrators. We observed preschool children's meals and also interviewed food service staff and teachers. And I'll go into each one of these in a little bit more detail. So for the plate waste evaluation, you need to do this once to know that if you ever do it again, you'll plan more time. Preschoolers, well, they're messy. And to do a plate waste evaluation, you literally have to weigh everything ahead of time, and then afterwards, you're scraping it off the children, off the floor. So I had a team of one very dedicated graduate student and two honors undergraduate students who were phenomenal at this. And the kids were very cooperative as well. But you don't really you don't read that in any of the articles. This is what you have to do, is scrape food off of kids. In any event, we want it to be very thorough. So we started off by doing one initial visit at each of the preschools just to assess what the flow of service was with the foods, the timing, the logistics, where people needed to stand, how they could work all through this. And I will say that foods at three of the sites were served family style, so we did not do individual assessments. This is actually mandated by law in Massachusetts. All the foods were weighed immediately before and after lunch using the Taylor digital scale. And it's a good thing we did a preliminary run because the initial scale that we had was off considerably, so we actually had to get another scale. Beverages, milk in this case, were not included in the plate waste evaluations. The online surveys consisted of 8 questions. We developed and then pilot tested and made some revisions. They were administered via SurveyMonkey to 2 administrators from each of the preschools that were invited to complete this, and all informed consents were obtained online. For the qualitative methods, we did observations. They were non-intrusive. We had no interactions with the children and members of the research team. And what we did was we observed children's eating behaviors during lunch, and the eating behaviors of the teachers who ate with them. We also wanted to know the conversations between the teachers and the children and between the children themselves. And I'll present some of those data. These are great. I mean, listening to these kids was wonderful, I have to say. And then finally, we did interviews with teachers and food service staff. This was a 9-question interview, again, developed and pilot tested and revised, and at least one teacher and food service staff from each one of the 4 participating schools was interviewed, and they took place in the school sites after lunchtime during nap time, and written consent was obtained from each of these participants as well. All right, so what did we find? Well, the plate waste evaluations, we did 3 of them after the initial site visit, and they took place during the summer of 2012. And initially, the data from our frequencies and our crosstabs indicated that children at 2 of the preschool sites were consuming more peaches and green beans than the control site, and that children at the control site were consuming more carrots and peaches, but at the control site, more green beans were being consumed. However, when we actually ran statistical analysis, there were no significant differences. So there, had we had more sites, we may have seen something different. I can explain the green beans, and we will come back to that. Can explain the green beans. As far as the surveys are concerned, we sent them to 7 administrators. 5 did respond, and I will say that one of the administrators asked the food service director to complete the survey because he didn't have the opportunity to do so and thought that the food service supervisor would be able to answer the questions more appropriately. And what we find are some of the key findings that I'll go into a bit more in a minute, but just the importance of the school environment itself, how important encouragement and engagement that we've heard from some of the other speakers. Some of the challenges were cost and space issues, and some of the future steps, again, getting the parents involved. So, again, a few respondents, and I'm just highlighting a few of the things here. We asked the administrators, have you worked with or encouraged food service staff, and how to sort of promote this culture of change around healthy eating? And really, the classroom environments are one of the things that came through most importantly, along with healthy and positive role modeling by the teachers and the food service staff, because they have a lot of interaction with the preschool children. When we asked about main challenges, again, cost and space. Now, cost is going to come up both as a challenge and a benefit, which was really interesting finding here. And also making sure that the timing to prepare the foods, keeping the foods fresh, staff buy-in, and the number of staff were also issues that were mentioned. And then finally, seeing the future of the farm to preschool program, education of parents about healthy eating was, above all, the one thing that the administrators thought was the most significant. Certainly inviting mobile markets and some of the other fresh farm produce programs, offering healthy snacks, and then professional development also was mentioned, as well as curriculum and more money to purchase curriculum, nutrition curriculum. The results of the observation in the interviews, again, conducted in the summer of 2012, and what we did is we had standardized protocols where the data collectors were taking handwritten notes but also capturing mealtime behaviors and dialogues. So it was a standard form that they were using. And 8 interviews were conducted. They ranged between 5 minutes and 30 minutes. Most of them were 20 to 25 minutes. And sometimes it's literally standing at the edge of a kitchen while the food service director is working and they're just answering questions. And you get what you can get. These people are busy, and they certainly weren't going to take extra time away from the day at the end of the day to try to participate in the survey, but they were willing to talk with us during their day after lunch was served. So these are some of the recurring themes, or these are the recurring themes. How to increase fruit and vegetable intake, some of the facilitators of increasing fruits and vegetables and just in general farm to preschool programs, what infrastructure factors are needed, some of the challenges, and some of the benefits. So I'm going to go through each one of these. Looking at increasing fruit and vegetable intake, engagement and encouragement were 2 of the sub-themes that came through. And clearly, I don't have a pointer here, but the first column are the sub-themes, and the teachers, food service, and children. So the teachers were talking about the importance of taste testing, getting the kids involved, having them actually making the fruit salads, not sitting at the sidelines. As was mentioned earlier, these kids can get involved. I don't know if you're a fan of the Food Network, but you know, kids are on TV preparing things, and they're more sophisticated than I am. So if we start them in preschool, imagine what they can do when they're adults. So the next Iron Chef, look out. Food service are really talking about making the characters come alive with the vegetables. I mean, broccoli characters. Broccoli seem to be they can either be trees, they can be little people, they can be all sorts of things. So really getting the kids involved in a story related to the foods. And then the kids obviously, you know, pretending that they're actually cooking and really wanting to be part of the process. Encouraging and complimenting the kids as they're eating their vegetables. I like the way you're eating your broccoli. You know, again, because the teachers are eating with the children, they have that opportunity to engage with them on a timely basis. Making things appealing and creative, making it look interesting. And I like this quote from one of the teachers. If you plop a big old apple in front of them, they're like, oh, it's just an apple. But the kitchen cuts it up and makes it look nice and fancy, so the kids are like, oh, apple dippers. Doesn't take much to engage the kids. And then, again, as I said, embellishing and making it fun, making the broccoli trees and creating a fun and relaxed environment around food is probably the bigger take-home message that will work with fruits and vegetables or anything. And then cooking methods. This was actually something that we saw quite a variety of responses. So some of the teachers saying our vegetables are really bland and that's why the kids don't eat them. Others saying, well, you know, sometimes it seems like they're putting too much garlic or butter in it. So, but the bottom line is they all seem to agree that if it's fresh, that they will actually eat more and prefer it more. And that was reiterated by the food service saying, you know, it may actually take a little bit more time to, for example, in this case, cut up a fresh pineapple, but the staff do it because the kids really like it. And, of course, they were also very proud that they don't fry anything, so everything is oven-baked. So they're really encouraging the healthy eating across the board, not just fruits and vegetables. This would obviously include things like, you know, chicken and other mealtime options. And I included these three quotes for the children also because I thought they were really telling. The one about the sandwich, this is significant because it was lettuce, crunchy lettuce, and they had shaved some carrots on it as well. So that this child thought it was going to be nasty, but was surprised that it actually was pretty good. Now here's where we come to the green beans. No matter what your food is, if you just pick it out of the garden, but you cook the heck out of it, it's going to get squishy and squeaky. And kids do not like squeaky and squishy green beans, carrots, or any kind of vegetable. So bottom line is, no matter what it is, where it comes from, you just have to cook it in a way that's going to be appealing to them. Okay, now, oh, there we go. We're back again. Okay. Positive role modeling. So teachers being silly and trying it first and seeing that they're eating it first and the kids are watching them, that actually it's going to be okay. It's not scary. Green beans, carrots, and other vegetables will actually be okay. And I like this other quote saying, making it a routine. It's a majority of us sitting with the kids. When they see it, us do it, others, they'll do it too. And the food service, again, we're having spinach. Oh, I really like spinach, even if they don't. That's important too. And then again, these children's quotes are great. So this is one child saying to another, ew, what's this? And the child next to him saying, well, it's a skin. It's the skin inside the peach. Eat it, it's good. So kids can be role models for each other as well, which is a really powerful message. And then this other one, the final one on the bottom, saying from a teacher, there was a child who didn't like blueberries at first, but a friend took the blueberries, put them in her milk, and there you go, you have blueberry milk. All of a sudden, it's blue, it's funky, it's fun, and it happens to be healthy in blueberries. So, all right, some facilitators. Having the nutrition curriculum. These quotes actually captured much more than we expected. So the teachers are talking about the kids loving the nutrition curriculum. Now remember, there was one of the four sites used the curriculum regularly. One of them used it occasionally. But of these two, they said that doing this section every week, and actually the kids really like talking about the food groups, and at that time the food guide pyramid, breaking it down and really making the connection between the sort of educational component, what's happening in the what's being served for lunch, and then bringing it all together is kind of a nice match. But then the food service directors, interestingly, were talking about the curriculum, saying that it's educating the teachers as well. Oftentimes we find that teachers don't want to teach about nutrition because they feel uncomfortable and they don't feel like they know enough about it to teach about it, but having a curriculum alleviates that tension and provides them with a structure. So as this was saying, it can see what a difference it makes in the classroom. And then also a food service saying, interestingly enough, bringing the food service together with the teachers. When we have our meetings, it brings us together. We can discuss ideas, different techniques, and how to improve what we do. So it's making that team, it's really bringing these folks together and creating a dialogue where this is an unintended consequence of something that I think is a really nice positive influence. The importance of parental support and seeing and hearing that parents are saying, you know, my kid would never touch this stuff, meaning fruits and vegetables, before, but now he's asking for it. And the parents saying how much they're amazed at the intake that the kids are having of fruits and vegetables. There are some challenges, though. Certainly making sure that having enough, a large enough facility, having the right equipment, having the right staffing is important as well, and making sure that you have this the infrastructure to support the food service. As I mentioned earlier, cost came out both as a challenge and a benefit. So some of the teachers thinking that fresh fruits and vegetables can be a little more expensive, but a food service saying, you know, some just don't believe that there's a big savings, but they're wrong. They're really wrong. You can have big savings. The other thing that came out was waste and the real need to actually get beyond what was just the farm to preschool and just knowing how to cost out enough food so you don't have that waste and then you can recoup those costs and bring it into the and be a much more efficient sort of food service operation. It is challenging, some people saying, some food service saying, to cut up and prepare the fresh fruits and vegetables, yet others are saying, you know, it's not that as labor intensive as we thought. And then others saying that, you know, it's actually easier to give them fresh fruits and vegetables rather than opening cans and dishing them out. And this is actually a pretty powerful quote. Now, again, we're talking about sort of the food sharing and cost sharing. This was a very small, this was only four sites, but those that were able to actually cost share had an average of 30% savings on the food bill and 40% on paper supplies. I mean, that's a huge amount of cost savings for very few sites. Imagine what it can be if we had an even larger number to work with. Certainly, we had a very small sample size. We weren't able to do individual child intake observations, limited number of foods, and this was limited to the summer months. But I think we did find some interesting findings. And I think one of the things that's unique about this small assessment was we got information from the children, the teachers, food service staff, and the administrators. You don't often get all of that within one program. We did see some common themes, certainly from what we've heard today, the importance of parental involvement, the importance of engagement and getting the kids involved, positive reinforcement, positive role modeling. Some completely different perspectives. This issue of cost is really something that we need to explore a little bit more. But I think bottom line is we got some useful insight about the role of food service operations, classroom environment and management support, and needs of infrastructure. Next step is focusing on, again, bringing the families in for family field trips, for example, working with the executive directors and the administrators more to close that gap and make sure that there's a clear communication. And then finally, to continue working on a statewide policy to establish higher professional development standards for food service employees and teachers regarding nutrition and nutrition education. And I just wanted to acknowledge the Jessica Collins and Joan Lowbridge-Sisley, who are our community partners, Tony Jenkins, who is the graduate student who is doing her master's thesis on this, and then Tim and Eva, who are undergraduate honors students, as well as my colleague Gloria DeFulvio, who helped with the evaluation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Elena. I hope you enjoyed those three presentations. I really loved the quotes, again, from the parents that said, it's amazing that my kids will eat those fruits and vegetables that they won't hear at home. Something we commonly hear is, what's magic about the lettuce? It's lettuce, but when the kids grow it themselves or they're with their peers who are trying it themselves, it changes their perspective from what happens at home often. So we have about 10 minutes now for questions, and so we're going to open up to all presenters. So I think that microphone's on, if you'll come up and introduce yourself and go ahead and ask your questions. You come to the mic? Talk loud. I'd just like to add one comment from sort of the bigger perspective, this state and national perspective, is that we're starting to see sort of state organizing around the farm-to-preschool idea. I can speak from experience in Georgia that we formed a farm-to-preschool coalition of providers who are already sort of dabbling in the techniques. And we've put together actually our first farm-to-preschool summit, which was actually the first in the nation. There was another one that followed close behind in New Hampshire after ours. But the idea is similarly to farm-to-school. There's many state coalitions that are coming together. The idea is you could also put together this similar coalition around preschool. It's mostly a different set of stakeholders, not entirely. So sometimes those things, those two groups can interact, but there's some uniqueness around the preschool environment which necessitates that you have different partners. For example, at the state level, our child care licensing agency is in our group, as well as the Department of Ag, Public Health, and our state leads for Farm to School, which is the NGO. So that's actually going to be a session at the hopefully at the Farm to Cafeteria Conference, where we'll talk about this idea of organizing around farm to preschool in order to get more programs engaged and provide technical support, provide state surveys, which is another thing from the national level that we're trying to encourage to understand the landscape in each state around farm to preschool. Any more questions? Go ahead. Speak loudly. I'll start with a couple of things. So, because I think one of the sort of the point of these state level organizing bodies, which could be a food policy council, it could be a coalition, something else, is to help build that infrastructure in order to control that issue of cost, or to figure out the solutions, for example, food hubs in order to aggregate product, in order to provide a more stable stream or a stable purchasing for the farmers of all different scale, and then to be able to provide more consistent product, perhaps, to the institutions, including child care. Another thing that we've been looking hard at is the idea of linking those food hubs, or otherwise building centralized kitchens in order to prepare meals that can be provided to childcare facilities under the CACFP and reimbursement rate. And we have some great models happening in Vermont and in Utah that I can tell you about, where they've been able to scale up the food preparation, source local product as much as possible, but because of the scale, able to provide consistent, high-quality meals to child care facilities. So I like to think about these solutions which might require some cooperation, you know, and some getting together, and I love that food policy councils are thinking about this and food hubs are thinking about this, because I believe there's a lot of rich opportunities and cooperative buying and that sort of thing in order to help control those costs. Seasonality is another issue, which in the childcare environment is actually even more acute than it is for K-12. I mean, K-12, the issue is that the season of bounty is summertime when schools aren't in session. You often have childcare in session in the summer, so that's good, but Are there approaches in order to extend the season or to put away that local product in order to extend the season? So in northern climates, there's agriculture production techniques like hoop houses and such, which can extend the growing season. And then are there ways to freeze or otherwise package away that local product in order to extend season? So even though seasonality, I think, is a really important teaching tool, there's also other considerations of practicality that we need to also address, and those are some ways. Can I just tell you one more story, because I love this one from Michigan? There's a program in Michigan. I'll get to you one more, but it's about this whole issue of season extension and the idea of hoop houses. They have a program called Hoop Houses for Health that the Farmers Market Association, funded by Kellogg, provides loans to farmers in order to build hoop houses in Michigan. And instead of repaying that loan directly back to the Farmers Market Association, they actually provide vouchers to Head Start families to come to the farmers market and buy produce from that farmer that got that loan. And, I mean, how cool is that, right? You know, so I would love to see more of those kinds of models happening. It's not sustainable in the fact that it's a one-way flow of funds, but it's infrastructure development, which I think is super important, too. So, sorry.
Thank you. Use And just to add to that, for our particular program, you know, what we do is focus on a particular fruit or month, fruit or vegetable every month. And so we have the children helping prepare the foods and taste the foods during that month. Then we have parent workshops that also focus on that particular fruit or vegetable, and we provide them recipes and cooking demonstrations. And then on top of that, we're able to offer the market basket program. There are, you know, there is on-site nutrition education talking about the foods on the table and how to cook it. So we've had parents buying, you know, something that we think might be simple, like broccoli, and saying, my kid wants this, I don't know what to do with it. And there'll be someone there to start talking to them and provide recipe cards in different languages. So it's really looking at it sort of from a holistic perspective, working with the teachers, the parents, the kids, the food services. And I think that's really what will help make these changes last the lifetime.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that comment. My personal opinion is that one of the best obesity prevention initiatives that we could initiate in schools is to bring back home ec. I think that cooking is a fundamental life skill that's lost often in kids. And so bringing it back to the preschool environment, we hope will help spark the interest in kids that they might themselves seek those skills, which I do agree is a fundamental life skill. So we're past time. If you want to continue this discussion, please join us in the Lucky Lounge, which I believe is about 2 or 3 blocks away. And thank you for coming to this session. I hope you've had as much fun as we have. If any of you are involved with Head Start, and I am going to be speaking at the Head Start Parent Conference, which will be in Atlanta in December, and so we'll have a session on farm to preschool there, which will be focused for Head Start parents as part of their Health and Wellness Institute. So thank you again for coming.